Good morning. Welcome. My name is Chantelle Wilson, and I'm the registrar at the Ryerson Image Center in Toronto, Canada. I would like to take this opportunity to thank you all for attending this session, as well as the ARCS Conference Committee for inviting me here to speak to you all about crowdsourced cataloging. Yay! I have in my speech here that I should pause for excited cheering. So, right. Awesome. So today I'm going to present the details of the Ryerson Image Center, or the RICS, ongoing project with the company Tegasaurus, its advantages, disadvantages, as well as how this has shaped our understanding of controlled vocabulary, access, and cataloging in general. So with this in mind, I wanted to start with the question that we started with when beginning this project, and that was, is crowdsourced technology the answer to quickly and efficiently catalog large collections to provide almost instant relevant access to its holdings? Before I get into the nuts and bolts of this case study, I wanted to give you a little bit of background on the collection at the RIC and how this project came to be, because our functionality is a large part of how we interpret the kind of data produced from a project like this. So bear with me while I give you some details. So the Ryerson Image Center, as it exists today, opened in the fall of 2012. The RIC operates around three interrelated areas of activity. Our exhibition program addresses the topics of social, cultural, aesthetic, and historical concerns from a variety of contemporary perspectives. Our research center conducts and facilitates inquiries into primary resource material and offers lectures, symposia, and publication programs. And finally, we maintain and expand a collection of photography, aiming to represent the medium's complex history. We do have a team of 15 full-time staff members, but only four are dedicated to collections work. Out of those four, one is split between both exhibitions and collections. So we're not as small as the one-man show from the last session, but we're small, but we're mighty, so we get a lot done. So the collection at the RIC has been evolving at Ryerson University since the late 1960s, where it first began as a teaching collection. It was a tool for faculty members to show students at the School of Image Arts examples of original objects by photographers who impacted and shaped the history of photography. Currently numbering close to 5,000 photographs, the collection includes historical works by many seminal figures. So I won't bore you with a list of details, but I'll give you a couple of heavy hitters of Francis Frith, Eugene Atje, André Gertège, Edward Weston, Andreas Feininger, and W. Eugene Smith. We do have a full contemporary collection that includes works by Eldon Garnett, Clara Gucci, Gabor Selassie, Arno Meggs, and Edward Bertinsky, to name a few. The collection has grown to include four expansive artist archives, numbering approximately 3,000 to 6,000 objects each, a large collection of stereographic material, as well as a full unbound run of Life magazine. The collection's strengths lie in representing the history of photoreportage and female photographers working in the 20th century. So the RIC's longstanding, I'm breaking the rules from yesterday and I'm posting a picture of our storage room. So you can't see anything, so I thought it was okay. So the RIC's longstanding culture of collection and connoisseurship provided the physical and intellectual infrastructure that led to the successful acquisition in 2005 of the Black Star Collection. This collection is 292,000 photographs by more than 6,000 photographers from the Black Star Agency's picture library. Starting in 1936 and assembled over a period of 80 years in New York City, the photographs in the Black Star Collection represent the personalities, events, and conflicts throughout the 20th century. The Black Star Agency acted as the agent between the photographer and books, magazines, or newspapers who required photographs for distribution and contributed heavily to the growing evolution of the photo essay, as well as the use of images in the illustrated press. The collection includes a wide variety of subjects, ranging anywhere from the depiction of space exploration to banal landscapes or of animals posing humorously, and encompasses over 23,000 different subjects, highlighting the versatility the Black Star Agency wished to offer their clients. So because the Black Star Collection was heralded as one of the largest gifts of Canadian cultural property gifted to a university in Canada, efforts to provide digital access to researchers, curators, and students was immediate. I should probably point out that after the acquisition in 2005, it came with a donation of funds to build our new facility that opened in 2012. So between 2005 and 2012, the collection was stored off-site, and we were still required to kind of provide access, and we still continued to digitize and catalog during that time off-site. So that's kind of gives you an idea of that we were kind of working half blind. So I'm going to take a moment to contextualize the term crowdsourcing for the purpose of the presentation. It is not my intention to summarize all the different types, definitions, and methods of this technology, but to provide you with the basic information related to this case study. The term crowdsourcing is increasingly utilized to define online projects involving the contribution of an undefined public, or the crowd. While the term seems modern, this idea is not exactly new, and most of you will understand the basic idea. It's a larger task delegated to many individuals exerting an equal amount of effort. In 2006, Jeff Howe coined the term and explained that crowdsourcing is an act of a company or institution taking a function once performed by employees and outsourcing it to an undefined and large network. This can take the form of peer production, but it is also often undertaken by sole individuals. An exhaustive definition has yet to be determined and seems to change from industry to industry as time goes on. It has been suggested that the crowd is wiser, more talented, and efficient in these types of microtasks, transcending age, gender, race, education, and job history. So for our purposes, we viewed crowdsourcing as a way to effectively tag images with subject terms in our collection, something that was needed to provide another intersection into our holdings. We wanted to be able to support as many perspectives as possible. So as most of you already know, accessibility of collections is determined by the end user, as well as any available resources. Since 2005, the RIC staff have been digitizing and cataloging the Black Star collection in our in-house database. For efficiency's sake, we have prioritized a number of fields for basic navigation, allowing for the entry of additional information when a researcher or curator provides additional context. So we currently populate these following fields. So we do the maker, the medium, the event date. The Black Star subject is a pre-populated field that came from the agency. I'll talk a little bit about that in a minute. We do transcribe inscriptions as well as the dimensions, which is pretty easy because it was a press collection, so they were all pretty much 8x10s or 16x20s. So as you may have guessed by this field list and by all the corresponding empty fields in this adorable screenshot from our database, without knowing exactly what you are looking for, it can be difficult to enter the collection. Not impossible, but somewhat challenging. So the pre-populated Black Star subject headings represent the hand notations that were on the outside of the manila envelopes that the photographs were originally stored in at the agency in the library. While this is how the collection continues to be arranged and is a great place to start, these subject headings can be inaccurate, broad, sometimes politically incorrect, and difficult to navigate through due to human error. We often find Japan, like photographs of Japan in the China folder, and sometimes we find things on the backs of photographs that don't match the subject heading at all because they were misfiled. It was an active, well-used library at the agency's headquarters. So moreover, the backs of photographs are not as reliable as one may envision. While we have a lot of information here, some of it is not always accurate. In the 1980s, Black Star started barcoding their photographs and put a date stamp of copyright 1980 on every single photograph, which can sometimes confuse catalogers if they're not really familiar with the collection, which is the barcode on the bottom left corner of this image. And often we also have backs that have nothing on it at all, or very little information. So with this in mind, we wanted an additional way to enter into the collection by indexing and searching relevant subject terms to help with entry points and mitigate any conflicting metadata. So prior to my arrival at the RIC and the subsequent management of this project, my colleague Valerie Matteau was first tasked with providing this type of access to the collection and set out different ways of solving this problem. Upon hearing about a project that Magnum recently completed with a company called Tagasaurus, we decided to engage in introductory conversations and found their resources to be suitable for our needs. So based on our prioritized cataloging goals that I have already outlined, it was decided that using Tagasaurus's, that's a hard word to say plural, technology to attribute keyword subject terms would be the most beneficial, as it would not only replace the more traditional description fields that we are not populating, but offer the RIC a way to provide an alternative searchable field quickly and efficiently, something necessary to match the digitization goals with a limited number of staff resources. By choosing to focus on subject terms and searchable keywords, we were able to keep the project manageable and within our comfort zones. It was kind of a scary thing to kind of give all our data away and let somebody do something with it. So Tagasaurus uses what's called a Mechanical Turk method of crowdsourcing. This can be explained simply as individuals completing repetitive tasks remotely. And in our case, these individuals are located both nationally and internationally. They're paid a certain amount per attributed tag, and they kind of exist all over the world and log into this crazy network. They assign an image with keywords or phrases based on controlled vocabulary or a binary workflow outline for them. So this slide illustrates the back end of the Tagasaurus workflow used by the taggers. I know it's crazy, and it's just kind of interesting because it shows you the path that information travels when they're deciding on a keyword. It essentially boils down to a number of questions and standardized vocabulary choices the taggers choose from or are asked to answer before assigning a keyword. Between our database administration and collection specialists, the RIC determined a number of qualifiers for this workflow. So some of them include a choice between day or night, a descriptive tag chosen from a controlled vocabulary, orientation of the image, age, gender, the number of people photographed, a photographic style, which I'll get to a little bit later, which is kind of interesting, and subject categories that were chosen from, I believe we used the Getty subject thesaurus. So there are also a number of binary questions that, in addition to these other questions, as well as embedded software programs such as facial recognition, name recognition, and term recognition. So to kind of begin, the digitized image, front and back, basic field information that I've already outlined, as well as the caption, if it was cataloged, that was kind of a big if in when we started this project, are provided to three taggers. This information is transmitted digitally through an API from our database into the Tagasaurus system. Each tagger assigns three keywords per image based on the workflow already described and can see the tags assigned by the previous tagger. So this allows for some accuracy and in terminology. Once a maximum of 9 unique tags have been assigned to each image, another 5 taggers review the images to remove redundant terms and confirm attributions. This is referred to as the voting stage. So a minimum of 3 taggers are required to either agree or disagree on a keyword before it is included or excluded as a final keyword. The nice thing about this workflow that I kind of showed you before is that at any time throughout the tagging process, a RIC user can log onto the Tagasaurus dashboard, that's what this is here, review the progress and any assigned attributions. I'm gonna go back through my little. So once the batch is completed, we do this in batches every couple of months so that they're not tagging one image at a time. The content is reloaded into our database and becomes readily searchable almost instantaneously. All right. So in theory, based on digitization goals in this workflow, the entire Blackstar collection would be tagged and cataloged within 8 years. This amounts to over 292,000 assets and over 7 million attributed keywords, which is crazy. Tagasaurus has a network of over 30,000 workers tagging images at any time. This allows them to tag approximately 50,000 images in less than 60 days. So sorry, this kind of flipped through, but you'll kind of see the tags that were attributed there, and I'll talk about the errors in a little bit. But you can see that the keywords list both identifying characteristics as well as related social and cultural keywords that one may attribute to the subject matter. So because we have over 23,000 subjects, you could be looking for anywhere from a hand to a civil rights activist to a tree to a riot to the Apollo 11 space mission. So these terms are now easily searchable in our database and links previously unrelated imagery in new ways that wasn't possible prior to this attribution. So moreover, we are able to actually describe the images to some extent, something else that we weren't able to do because of cataloging constraints. So the additional benefits of this type of project are easy to highlight. First and foremost, we are provided with enhanced cataloging productivity. We would not be able to produce this amount of information in the same amount of time with the permanent staff and resources available to us. This is a big bonus for people out there when you have to report on deliverables in progress. We are also given alternative perspectives on the subjects portrayed throughout the collection. So since we already have trained photo specialists cataloging our basic fields and highlighting, you know, important works, these new keywords offer us what some would refer to as an untrained attribution. We find this incredibly useful because we're based out of a university. Our users range from photographic historians to fashion students to scientists, artists, as well as general public. We are open Monday through Friday, 10 to 5. We're open to the public. You don't need an appointment to come in. So somebody who doesn't know anything about the history of photography could walk in at any time and say, I want to see all the pictures of cats, which happens a lot. So we can do it. So that brings me to kind of my next point, is that the users often require a wider range of access points into a collection of this size. The type of keywording increases the versatility of search options. Additional options, whether general or specific, offer the user more precise results without knowing all the details of the photograph, where it was made, where the event it portrays, and who the photographer was. Lastly, by participating in this type of activity and involving metadata technology, we are developing quality control guidelines that can be used in other contexts, formats and projects relating to metadata, arrangement, and description. This only furthers our experience in the field and allows for the institution to push at its boundaries. So, and now for the fun part, is the problems. So this doesn't come without its set of complications. As you can see in the examples that I've shown, the term no photo style has appeared quite frequently. So when the tagger has selected that there is no photo style, there has been an error in the system that it's populating an answer, which, by the way, one of our researchers absolutely loved. She saw it the other day, and she was like, oh, my God, you know, like, that term just defines how people think of photojournalism. I'm going to write an article on that. And I'm like, well, I'm going to take it out, like, in 5 minutes, so don't. So, like, because it's an error, right? I heard the conversation yesterday about keeping errors and mistakes in your database. It kind of made me rethink about it. So we'll see how it goes. My director's not too happy about it, so we'll have to see how it goes. And also, there's duplication. Sometimes the duplicate tags kind of come through. If more than one person has tagged it and the workflow isn't streamlined enough, they kind of pop through and through the code. There's other problems that I haven't found yet, but those are the two main ones. Additional tuning is obviously required to ensure these keywords are properly attributed and don't recall an unusually large amount of objects to search through. So in this Rosa Parks image, it's listed as a panorama. I'm not really sure who thinks that this is a panorama, but anyway. Moreover, a thorough review of standardized vocabulary was required to ensure they met our own standards of description. It kind of really makes you think hard about what you're using to describe your collection. So this highlights the risks and limitations also present in crowdsourced technologies. So the first and most apparent downside is the possibility for errors, dirty data, duplications, errors, and incorrect attributions. I think we have this with any sort of cataloging project. It's just because of human error, we tend to not look at it as closely. But when a machine is doing it, we have higher expectations. So I think, you know, and because it's en masse, it's more apparent. So this obviously requires additional review to ensure those terms are being assigned correctly. This may require an adjustment to your crowdsourcing workflow, your organizational structure, or even the vendor you are working with. I'd like to point out that Tagasaurus is a private, for-profit company. They're a vendor. They have worked with a couple of different museums with NEH grants, I believe. I don't know too much about NEH grants because I'm from Canada, but you will have a hard time getting money for something like this if it's not connected to something open source, because obviously the federal government wants to promote not-for-profit work and work in kind of providing more information for people, not making companies richer, hopefully. So I can get to that kind of budget limitation in a minute. But I just did want to point that out just so that you kind of were aware. So there's also a risk that you are actually disabling the searchability of functionality or your data. Assigning broad terms can result in too large of a return with a search. So, you know, there's almost 300,000 photographs in our collection. There's a lot of trees. There's a lot of trees. So you know, assigning a broad term like that can result in a big return of objects. And this is something you kind of have to decide is worth providing to your end users or if it's just going to complicate the process. We're lucky. We haven't met our lofty digitization goals, so when you search for a term, whatever's digitized comes up first and the rest kind of follows behind it with that, you know, that sad little image that says not available yet. So at least they get to see what's digitized first, but when everything's digitized in, you know, 100 years, it might be a bigger problem. So future literacy and relevance is something we think a lot about at the RIC when describing our collection holdings. Language, cultural implications of imagery, accurate terms, and standardized vocabulary has shifted significantly over the past decade due to changing terminology, technology, and archival practice. We have attempted to choose terms that will transcend this type of evolution, but it's not something that we may be able to predict or even understand. This essentially calls for a retag every so many years to ensure your data is up to date. You know, so you could be finishing a project in 10 years and having to start all over again, possibly. That leads me to the most administrative limitation, which is budget and staff allocation. So we projected the cost and staff time this would take, and it shifts constantly. Depending on fiscal budgets, staff, other projects that somehow jump ahead of it, grants, what have you. If you are not in a position to carve out a budget for this type of project, it will be difficult to carve out a workflow that is tested and relative to your original data. So moreover, staff oversight is important, is like the most important factor here. If you do not have somebody managing this implementation, the data just, it just won't do what you want it to do. It'll just kind of sit there and be data. So when I was thinking about how this information could benefit other collection specialists, I thought about kind of essential questions I would have asked prior to embarking on our own crowdsourcing adventure. So the first is what are your goals? You know, have your end users been considered? We, like I said, our collection was off-site for, you know, a number of years, and we had staff going there every single day to, well, sorry, 3 days a week to digitize and catalog, you know, and we were bringing curators there, we were bringing researchers there, we were going through boxes, and the shipping company that housed our collection, they're here in the audience today, so they well know we came every day and got in their way, and they had a little space carved out for us. So it was this understanding how the collection worked and what was in it. This is kind of why we chose to do this project, because we were so far removed from it. We didn't have access to it all the time, and it was kind of something that was really important to us to provide a lot of different perspectives, because we knew we wouldn't be able to catalog it all. So yeah, that was kind of where we came from, but you kind of have to decide what your goals are for your end users. And if it will help or hinder your metadata structure. So what are the second one that's really important is the resources, both monetarily and staff. Do you have an adequate budget? Do you have an adequate staff group? Do you have even the adequate training to manage a project like this? Sometimes I feel like I need to go back to like cataloging basics and look at, you know, how to describe things very basically, because sometimes I think we're all specialists in our own areas, we have a lot of projects to manage, we have a lot of collections to manage, and sometimes we can forget, you know, like that people really just sometimes want a date and a maker and a subject, and I think we can kind of get away from that sometimes. So another really important thing to think about is your crowdsourcing vendor. Do they have a quality control plan? And are there tests that you can complete to determine compatibility with your existing data? Choosing a company to do this with is really, really important. You kind of have to like these people because you're probably going to be working with them for a long time. And they kind of have to know you and your collection and be able to work on evolving it with you. Based on these problems and questions and how we've kind of interpreted the data, Tagasaurus is, I mean, and their other clients, of course, but they've really been committed to working on their technology and are working on redeveloping their whole voting system and their API and their computer technology. So the technology is changing all the time. So what doesn't work for me today might actually be fixed for the next person. But we have to actually engage them in the conversation. to be able to get the results that we want. So another thing to think about is, how does the technology you plan to use deal with the integral problems of shifting technology, standardized vocabulary, and specialized industry terms? Photography is kind of a funny thing because it has its own kind of set of descriptive terms, just like every other specialty. So that's kind of something that we had to grapple with. You know, panoramas, things are incorrectly attributed as aerial. There's very specific photo historians out there that specifically want to define what aerial means. And so we get somebody coming and being like, that's not an aerial photograph. You need to fix that right now. So you kind of have to work with those researchers and tell them that your database and your metadata is a living, breathing thing that changes all the time. And so, finally, can this metadata or concept of organizing the metadata be useful in other ways in the future? Anytime you embark on a cataloging project or you're thinking about arrangement or description, you're building on your knowledge base about your own collection, and it's always a good idea. It's a great exercise for anybody in your institution. But you have to also decide, is this data going to be useful? You know, if you apply for a grant and you get the money to do this and then they won't give you another grant to implement it, it just sits there and it does nothing. Okay, so to conclude some of these thoughts, one of the perceived benefits of crowdsourcing is that you can just plug a mass of workers into your database. They will deliver a fully cataloged set of assets, and you can avoid dealing with the hassle of organizing it. Tagasaurus, we actually chose a very specific field. We chose only subject keywords because we were cataloging all of our own fields. And because we weren't really sure what the results were going to be. But they offer so many different services that can include up to basically cataloging it all remotely themselves. And includes geotagging, and they have this crazy thing that I don't really understand how it works, that anything they tag links to it the open source data on the internet, so when somebody Googles that term, your image comes up from your collection. We don't do that, but they do offer it, so it can be very extensive, the services that they offer. But it doesn't come without its own problems. It only works if the cataloging process has been designed, tested, and provided to be suitable for your institution's purposes. It is likely that you will need to either catalog a number of items initially for them to kind of show them what you're used to producing, and make sure this type of process is suitable for your needs and budget. Lastly, while crowdsourcing is an effective method for cataloging volumes of assets, anyone who believes this is a quick fix should, first weigh the risks and rewards before deciding on the techniques to be used. Even our small case study reflects this argument. Any cataloging endeavor that uses this method needs to be well planned beforehand and very carefully managed throughout implementation. So to answer the first question that I posed, was crowdsource cataloging the answer to quickly and efficiently catalog this collection for another access point? Yes and no. I wish there was a simpler answer. I wish I could say that it was the best thing we ever did, but it doesn't come without its problems, so I can't say that. That being said, to reaffirm the sessions from yesterday afternoon, we can only work towards attempting to provide as much information and access to our collection as possible. This is really important for us working at a university and being a public entity, errors and all. And it is my hope that by sharing our experiences, we can provide constructive feedback to vendors and help refine the process further for other collection specialists in the future. So.